Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, August 28th, 2026, and this is episode 129. Here in Nashville, we have had some sad news indeed this week with the passing of Tennessee icon Dolly Parton. By all accounts, she was an exemplary person, and her legacy will live on in her generosity. I will never forget attending one of her benefit concerts in at the Sevier County High School gym back in 1978. And just yesterday, I learned of the untimely passing of Tim Dockery, who was the longstanding and greatly admired director of Parks and Recreation in Newport, Tennessee. This is shocking in that his agency has just recently recognized by the Tennessee Municipal League as the Parks and Recreation Department of the Year. Our condolences to his family and to the people of Newport. He will be missed. Newport has the well-deserved reputation as a rough-and-tumble sort of place. Tim was just the guy to bring a multifaceted Parks and Recreation program to that town. Let's hope they can keep his legacy alive. As we get started today, I want to send a thank you out to Bethany Crandall for her assistance in arranging today's interview. Many of my listeners are involved in the hobby of gardening, and to be more specific, gardening with native plants. And I suppose there are stages of this hobby. At first, we dabble and acquire plants in ones and twos from nurseries, and that can be an expensive way to build a garden. Then we begin attending plant sales and swapping plants with other gardeners. Finally, we learn about growing our own, and this allows us to grow an abundant quantity of plants at a very low cost, and all the variety that we desire. It also gives us a real insight into the natural order of things in the plant world. And so our topic today is winter sowing, a technique for germinating native seeds and taking advantage of the natural cycle of nature. My guest today is Dr. Bika Punkeshwar. Bika is a child psychologist in her professional life. In her life outside of work, she is deeply engaged in the native plant movement as an avocation. Bika is one of the founders of the Nashville nonprofit called Neighbors for Native Plants, which has made its mission, making an abundance of native plants available to Nashville gardeners at the lowest possible price. As you will hear, in the process, she has undertaken to propagate a whole lot of these herself, and she uses the winter sowing technique to do this. And so I hope you will listen as Bika and I have a chat about tips and tips about the process of winter sowing. And we will get started right after this message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
So, Dr. Bika Punkeshwar, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's really fun to get to meet you in this way. Last year, about 18 months ago, I interviewed your friend Bethany Crandall, and we talked about a new organization called Neighbors for Natives. For native plants, that was just getting started at that time. And I think your name was mentioned as a co-developer of that organization, co-founder, I should say. And maybe if my memory serves, it was intended that you were going to join us for the interview, but at the last minute, you weren't able to join us, but nonetheless, you're here today, and thank you for being here. It's wonderful to have you. I want at the beginning, folks, to learn a little bit about you. You've got a fascinating background. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. All right. So I grew up in Belgium, in Europe, and I came here to Nashville to go to grad school for psychology. So I'm a psychologist. I'm in private practice. I currently do like evaluations with kids to figure out what's getting in the way of their learning. And yeah, that's been sort of like that's my path, my training. That's what brought me here in the first place. And
Okay.
then I got really into plants. So we can talk
Well,
about that
tell
next.
us about that. I mean, I guess in training for that sort of a program, you would have basics in biology and that sort of thing, but not a focus on botany, certainly.
Certainly not, no.
Yeah, tell us about what your interest is in plants and native plants and that sort of
Yeah.
thing. What got you interested in that?
I mean, I will say, like, before, kind of before coming here, I've always been very interested in nature. And I love just the feeling of like when you're on a walk in the woods, what that feels like. My grandfather had a big garden. And so he would have like strawberries and potatoes and whatnot growing. And it was really fun to be there as a kid, just to be in the garden. It felt kind of magical. There was just like, and then going on bike rides in Belgium and being like near fields was also very, just felt so beautiful and fulfilling. But I hadn't really thought of that as like, anything to do, like for me to pursue as a full-time or part-time or whatnot activity. And then I was at this conference, a psychology conference several years ago, and it really wasn't it, at that particular time, it wasn't really that engaging. But during the break, one of my colleagues, Joe, he said, "You know what? I think you'd really like to read. I think you'd really love to read this book by Doug Tallamy called
Oh my
Nature's
gosh.
Best Hope."
Oh my gosh.
Have you
Okay.
read it?
I don't know. I've read his first book, Bringing Nature Home,
Yes.
and I've read his book. And in fact, I read his book about oaks,
Oh, yes. That's a great one. Yeah.
and had an interview on this podcast with him,
With him? Oh, that's wonderful.
which was a real treasure. We spent about an hour on the line talking about his at that time new book
Yeah.
about oaks, but. But Doug Tallamy has been inspirational to many of us, hasn't he?
He really has. So basically what happened was after I read that book, I was just, oh wow. I thought, how in the world, like this is such important information that most of us don't know. And so I started telling anyone who would listen because I was also just like super excited about like learning this and feeling like there was a really kind of a very concrete way that we as normal people could contribute to making the world a better place. And so that felt very inspiring. So I was, really talking anyone who would listen's ear off. And one of my friends, Laura, she said, you should talk to Bethany because she's also talking to everyone about this. And so that's really how we kind of got connected.
I love that.
So Bethany and I sat down like around a, like a little backyard fire pit kind of deal, and started talking like, how can we get this message kind of across to people? Like, how can we make sure everyone knows about this as best as possible? And how can we make it easy and affordable kind of for busy families like our own? What we have kids, we have jobs, we're doing all the things, but it still feels and felt so important to kind of do something with it. So we decided to send emails and text messages to our friends and family. We thought, let's start there. And we told them, hey, we're doing this thing. We're going to try to order some native plants in bulk. We've looked them up. I think they're good for this area. And we, native to this area. And we would like to order them. And however many people, want to be a part of this, the more the merrier, because we can make the cost a bit lower
Kind of a
if we can.
collective order, so to speak, a lot of
Exactly.
folks might.
And so we had that first sale. We had about, I think we had 47, 46 families that decided to jump in. And we got about 600 plants distributed to those families as a result of our first efforts. And everyone was excited. Everyone was like, loved learning about this and ways that they can contribute. And so it was very energizing and just felt very rewarding as a thing, because we were just imagining all these, sweet little pollinators having now more plants to visit. So that kind of in from there to the next sale, because we do two a year. We do one in spring, we do one in fall. And to kind of go from point A to point B, that first year, which was in 2023, so spring 2023 was our first sale. We did some, we kind of like got a little bit more attention in a way. Like we made a website. I talked to Carly Gordon at Channel 4 News, and she thought it was very interesting. She talked to Richard Hitt as well, from Wild Ones. Anyways, so she kind of put together a little thing about it, and then she reposted that right before our fall sale. And as a result, a lot more people were exposed to this message. So we went from like 46 families to like 220 families.
Oh my.
And they all showed up. They all showed up basically at my house, because we were doing it out of my house. So the first one, holding on to like 600 plants, was fine. But I live somewhere where there's a lot of deer that will get into things. So if you got to protect the plants, right? So with these 200 people coming, or 220, and all their plants, basically my screen porch, but also parts of my living room, and we're all covered in plants. And so it got to be, we were super jazzed that people were so excited. But we started thinking, it was kind of like a little overwhelming in that moment. We had a few people that helped with volunteering to get people their things. We had applied for a grant through the Centennial Park Conservancy group. And so we had some free shrubs to give away. And so anyways, there was a lot going on and not enough people to kind of help steer the process. And then on top of it, it was all happening like right here. So between that and the next sale, we really wanted to regroup so that we wouldn't be like so overwhelmed, but still would get the plants out and the word out to as many people as possible. So one of my other friends, Rebecca, she is the director of the Friends of Shelby, Friends of Shelby Park group, and she said, "I wonder if Cornelia Fort Air Park, that area there, if that might be an option for you guys." So she connected me to John Michael at the Nature Center, the head there, and we all talked, and it felt like we all had the same kind of values in this and shared the vision. And so since that second time, we have had our events, our pickup events at the Cornelia Fort in one of those big airplane hangars. And that has just made
Oh
such a
my.
difference. We can close the
Nice.
door, deer can't eat it, but also our living spaces remain livable. So that's been wonderful.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong too, but as you described it a minute ago, that at first you were doing sort of a collective order from a commercial nursery. And you may be still doing some of that, but you're also growing out plants on your own.
Yeah, so we kind of, our sort of model has morphed, I mean, grown as we've grown and have figured out what do we want to do here. So for the kits, so we kind of have two different things going on. And at first it was just kits. We put the kits together, people picked them up. And those were all bought from commercial nurseries. Then we experimented with different nurseries, try to use nurseries close to home as best as possible, to kind of stick to the eco region. But we also started like, I mean, it's just so fun to be around these plants. And so, I mean, that's my bias, right? But that's how I feel. And so one year, it was actually kind of a little bit of a risky move, hindsight, but I was like, why don't I grow one of the species? Because we always have four for sun, four for shade. And I was like, why don't I just grow one of the species of these eight that we have? So I chose lyreleaf sage, which luckily is a fairly tough plant, like, so I think if I would have tried a much more difficult plant, I would have maybe given up altogether, but it worked out pretty well. And I realized, wait, having to grow enough plants to make sure that everyone who pre-ordered a plant will have that many, they have the plant, was a bit stressful, because there was, of course, like, a fungus at one point, and then there was like these little spider mites. Like there was little things going on, and they really made me realize I would much rather grow. And however many plants are good and healthy, those can be offered, to the public for
You
sale.
bet. You
So
bet.
after that, we decided our kits are always going to come from a nursery that we trust, and our day of species, more and more of those are
Okay.
species that we grow
Well,
ourselves.
that's very cool. And so your summary of your activities sort of presents in a nutshell the struggle that homeowners and gardeners have with trying to have more abundant native gardens. It's an expensive hobby.
It
If
can be,
you,
yes.
yeah, I mean, if you decide you want to have a native garden, and you're buying plants from nurseries, even, I have friends that are nursery people, and they're charging $12, $15, $20 a pot for plants. And with that sort of a budget, you're limited to how many
Right.
that you can buy.
Absolutely.
And so if you want to overwhelm a space with 100 or 200 or
Yeah.
plants, which sometimes is what's called for, it's practically impossible to do that. So
Yeah.
you really have to find a way to propagate these plants yourself. And so
Right.
that's why we're here today
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
to talk about a thing called winter sowing
Yep.
as a method of propagating desirable plants for your native garden. And
Absolutely.
so, as we talked a little bit before we got on the record, so to speak, you are using a method that involves Ziploc plastic containers. I have used a method that involves gallon milk jugs. It's the same. It's basically the same
Yes.
principle, the same process. But go ahead, if you can give us the basics of this. Why does
Yeah.
this work for native plants?
All right. And I will say real quick, I did start with the milk jug method as well.
Okay.
I learned about that at one of the workshops at Shelby Nature Center, by Julie Birbiglia. She
Sure.
explained it, and I tried it, and I was, this is the best thing ever. This was so
Right.
fun for me. So after that, since then, I've basically every winter I try more species and whatnot. But what I found with the milk jugs was that they took up a lot of space to store in between seasons. And then I kind of just stumbled upon this Ziploc bag method, but the main idea is the same. So the idea is that you fill your container, whichever one it is. It might be a milk jug, it might be a Ziploc bag that has like sort of the flat bottom that you can stand up. But basically, if you fill it with, I just fill it with regular potting soil, and then I will put my seeds on top. After that, I will water to make sure that everything is nice and, nice and everything's connected. All the seeds are connected to the soil.
Good
And
soil contact,
exactly, good
right.
soil contact. And then I often will sprinkle a little bit of soil on top, and then I sort of push it in because I want to make sure that they're not just sitting on top drying or whatnot. So I want there to be good soil contact. At that point, what happens for native seeds is they start, it happens for all seeds, but it's very important for native seeds that they get exposed to sort of a range of temperatures for a while before they germinate. They have this built-in mechanism that they won't germinate until certain conditions are met in terms of temperature specifically. Because imagine if they would just germinate as soon as they hit like some wet, piece of dirt. There would be so many casualties in the plant world, right? Because let's imagine that it's cold for a day and then it gets warmer the next day. If they started germinating just because it got warmer the next day, then the following week it freezes again and they would all be dead. So native seeds have like evolved to really be able to hold on until it's for sure that we're good. So they typically need like 30 to 60 days or so of pretty cold temperatures. And then warm temperatures. And by the way, just so like different native seeds need different things. kind of all under the umbrella of stratification, which means like what kind of has to happen to the seed before it is comfortable, even or not comfortable, that's a bit of a funny way to say it, but before it's ready to start germinating. And so some seeds will need cold, warm, cold, and then they start germinating. A lot of easier to grow plants will just need cold and then warmer temperatures before they start germinating. So people, especially at nurseries, they will use that knowledge, and they will use refrigerators and whatnot to stratify the seeds, meaning expose them to cold temperature for a certain amount of time and then, start the germination process. But the nice thing about winter sowing is that you don't really have to be that precise about it all. What I normally do is I get my seeds and I get my bags and I get everything like that ready sometime like mid-December. Mid to late December is normally when I get around to it. And then I have them sitting out in the yard for, and we can get into the details here in a moment, but I have them sitting out in my yard for as long as it takes until they just start germinating. And I check on them often, and some species will germinate more quickly than others. But it's sort of a very, if you think about your average gardener at home, who would love to have more of those beautiful flowers, but like you said, if you need 100, that gets to be very expensive. But if you do it this way, then it's not that hard to get to large numbers. And so that's kind of like the process. Normally around somewhere like March is when things start, seeming, I mean, things are starting to look green a little bit before that, but I make sure to wait until, you've got those first real leaves, of the plants. Like, so, there's the baby leaves, I think they're called cotyledons, and then the next set of leaves look distinct. They're not just like a generic baby leaf. And once they have those next set of leaves, then it seems more safe to like then get them out and put them in a larger pot to
Larger
kind of help
pots.
them grow.
So I guess the principle to boil it down is to emulate nature in some ways, in the cycle of nature. And I suppose we may have, if we had been more thoughtful about the introduction myself, we might have said, why would we be talking about this in August? And I think the answer is right now is the time when native plants are making seeds and the seeds are drying. I'm looking out in my yard and I see black-eyed Susans out there, and right now they're not flowering so much as they're just brown little balls at the end of the what used to be a flower, and all those are the seeds that are hardening off for the winter. And so, in the cycle of nature, those seeds would naturally fall on the ground and sit. And through the wintertime and through the freeze and thaw, and then they would germinate. And so what we're trying to do is emulate that process. So you described using the Ziploc bags, and I have seen that process utilized on different YouTube videos and people. You can go to YouTube and search for winter sowing, and you'll see a bunch of different techniques. And I saw one where a person had kind of a clothesline apparatus that they would ha actually hang all those little bags from. So that's another way.
I use like marshmallow sticks, like marshmallow roasting sticks. So I buy the longest ones you can get, and I get my bags. And I want to make sure that for your listeners, that everyone knows that it's the things that are most important once you have your soil in your seed, or actually before you get your soil in there, is to make sure you cut out some drainage holes, because all the water has to go somewhere. And then that typically at the top, I zip it closed, like mostly zip it closed, but then I leave a gap and I get a little clothespin to kind of hold it
Hold
open.
that gap open, right?
Because
So it'll have
we
a
want
way
the
to breathe.
rain, we want the snow, we want everything to be able to go in. And generally, unless it's like a really long dry period, you really don't have to do any additional watering. But I do keep track, because if it has been dry for a long time, then I may just do a little bit of supplemental watering, especially once you're like the baby plants are growing. The other thing that's, I think, helpful and important to think about is I will open the Ziploc bags a bit more. Like I will open them more when there's sort of an unexpectedly like warm day. Because what you don't want, you're basically creating this little greenhouse, right? But what you don't want is your new plants to get overheated. Because
Overheated,
that
sure.
does happen. That does happen. And also when there's going to be a really cold night, I will zip it. Well, I mean, I still leave a little opening, but I will zip it more tightly so that like there's less room for cold air to come in and hurt some of the
Well,
plants.
very, very well described. I have used the milk jugs. Now we're talking about
Yeah.
gallon milk jugs
Right.
that are not the clear plastic, but the sort of frosty white plastic. So they're translucent, so light can get through. And I
Yep.
will cut with a knife around the equator of the jug and
Yeah.
open it up. I put my put my punch holes in the bottom. Put my soil in there and sow the seeds, water them, and then put the top back on with the lid off.
Right. Yeah.
That's the vent. And then I will use duct tape
Yeah.
around to seal the thing back up. And that's the method that I use. So it's basically the same thing.
It is. Yeah,
And
absolutely.
so one tip that I would add, is to use sterilized soil.
Okay.
I think the temptation would be for people to use soil from their humus pile or from
Really?
and I have bought potting soil at hardware stores and at Home Depot or whatever, and had it infested with bugs and with weed seeds.
Right.
And so you want to get sterilized soil because, as you described, when these new little seedlings come up, it's very difficult to distinguish what's the desired seed, the desired seedling from a weed. And so you want to take the weeds out of the equation if you
Right.
if you possibly can. So get use sterilized seeds, and if you go to the hardware, it'll say on the bag, this is a sterilized product. So where do you get your seeds?
It's a few different places. Like
Okay.
the majority of them come from my yard.
Okay.
I like to walk the yard and wait until they're right, because like that's another thing that I think would be fun for people to kind of get into. It's like you talked about your black-eyed Susans and they're just these brown balls, and like there is sort of a time that you want the seed to like really get the sort of drying and being ready to be harvested. So I normally wait, and I will feel like, is there still resistance? Is there still sort of like, how shall I put it? Like, is this seed still connected to the plant? Because if it's tightly connected, it's too early. I haven't tried it because I read about it before, but read that if you use seeds that are not quite ready, that they won't do as well, because they're not ready. So, I think it's a fun process to just kind of wait around, check your seeds regularly, and then when they're loose, when they're coming off easily, like that's when I get like a little bag and I will just collect some. Of course, I want to leave some seeds for the birds and I want to leave some seeds just for the plant to do its thing just in my yard, but I also collect some for the next winter. So that's, to your earlier point, why are we talking about this in August? Because this is the time to be collecting seeds.
Exactly. Now, as you collect them, do you have techniques or suggestions about how they can be stored until you're ready to do your winter sowing?
I label them and then I kind of press out the air that's in the little bag, and then I normally keep them in my fridge to the point where like my husband's been like, I can't put this anywhere because there's seeds everywhere. But so anyways, I think that like I remember visiting Roundstone, the place in Kentucky that has all the beautiful native seeds, and they talked about all of their warehouse, like their whole thing is like set at 50 degrees, like they keep everything very cold or very cool. And so I don't
And
know if
dry,
I'm
cool and
sorry.
dry.
Yes, exactly. Cool and dry. So like I don't know if every seed absolutely needs that, but I have found that to be a very good way to like keep keep the season, even from season to season, because last winter I specifically wanted to compare like seeds that I'd harvested in 25 versus in 24. Were the 24 seeds still viable? And and they did pretty well. So like, but I some of this, I mean, Mark, just so everyone knows, like it's not because I'm an expert or have gotten a ton of training in this. It's really just trying things out
Right.
and seeing what works. And so far, having them stored in the refrigerator seems to be a good way to keep them fresh, so to speak, for the time winter sowing comes around.
And what I have done with seeds is to keep them an envelope, a manila envelope, I guess is,
Okay.
and to keep them dry. And I'll just set them in the cupboard,
Okay.
in a place where they're not going to get too cool or too hot.
Okay. All
And
right.
I've had luck with that. Now
Okay.
there's certain ones I do want to put in the fridge. There's certain of the acorns from oak trees or the little seeds from the chinquapin chestnut.
Okay. Okay.
Those need to be kept cool.
Okay.
But the garden seeds for native plants, just just a standard garden seed, the cool dry. I mean, if you look at how they're commercially available to you, if you go to the store to buy seeds, they're going to be in little paper packets for the
Right.
most
This
part,
is true.
right? I try to avoid using plastic because I think that the whatever moisture is there is gonna condense, and sometimes they'll get into mold and that kind of a thing. So that's the thing. I'm a little wary about putting them in their fridge because I don't want them to mold over for sure.
Well,
So
that's a good point. It makes me think about this other piece that I think is important to mention in terms of when you're harvesting seeds. I always harvest them when the sun has been out for a while. So like I want to make sure I don't harvest any seeds that still have dew on them or anything like
That
that.
no residual moisture for
Yeah,
sure. Absolutely. So
Yeah.
tell us some success stories. Can I start with one? I
Sure.
do want to hear some of your success stories, but what really got me turned on to this was sowing some big blue stem
Okay.
seeds.
Fun.
If you go to the nursery to buy some pots of big blue stem, you're gonna pay through the nose for those. I mean,
Right.
they're gonna be very expensive if they're
Yeah.
fully grown out.
Right.
But you can buy a pound of little blue stem or big blue stem seeds very cheaply and grow your whole backyard full of them
Right.
if you really want to do that. So I had the first thing I had success with winter sowing was with big blue stem,
That's so
and
fun.
it's been so much fun to do, and it was inspiring for me to do that, and so we've gotten into doing other things. So
Yeah.
what's been your most fun one?
Oh gosh. Well, I'm trying to think because I have grown like I want to say at this point probably 4,000 plants this way. And I love checking on them. So I think that there are some that have been like extra exciting when maybe they didn't all do well, but then you see that one seedling like actually making it. I have enjoyed like I was thinking about one of those in that category of like maybe they weren't all successful, but you see that one making it or the few making it and it feels exciting. It was like some Jacob's ladder was really fun.
Oh,
And maybe other people
nice.
have lots of success with that. For me, like when I tried it, I've tried maybe just that one season, but there was like three plants and they've done really well. But then also you have like certain plants that just become like they blow up your bag. I mean, the bag is full. And I think you were just saying making sure you don't put too many seeds in. And I think that's a little bit of a process of trial and error over time. Because I guess I tend towards having more seeds in there rather than less, just because I hope that something will happen. But then occasionally I feel like with the I'm trying to think of which ones are. Oh, I can't think of. Oh, primrose, evening primrose. I had spread a bunch of little seed because they're so small and they almost all germinated. And so I had a very dense, very dense Ziploc bag full of those.
Well, that's right. And then what you have is kind of difficult to work with, if because the roots and the plants are all intertwined, and if you're trying to tease them away from one another in order to put them in separate pots, it make it's a real struggle. So some of the seeds in these native plants are very, very tiny, some almost microscopic in size, and so I just be very, very cautious about not putting too many seeds in each little packet. But I've had luck too with parsley. Yeah, now, and parsley is sometimes for vegetable gardener type people, herb garden people, is a little bit tough to germinate by just going out in the springtime and putting it out in a row, and sometimes it just won't come up. The reason being that the seeds are just like little rocks. I mean, they are very hard. The outside surface of that seed is a very hard little nut, and so the winter sowing process that we've described make it opens it up a little bit. It through the process of freeze and thaw, it allows that thing to germinate. So,
Yeah, that's so
yeah.
great. Yeah, it's a really fun, fairly low effort way. I mean, it's very low effort in terms of helping get around the germination piece. It's not so low effort when you have a bunch of seedlings that you want to put into separate containers to help them
Right.
grow.
Right. That
So
can be tedious.
that has been
That
tea,
can be
but
very, very
really,
tedious.
I think also a bit to me at least, it can also be very kind of mindful. I feel like it can be very peaceful because I actually love just sitting outside in the spring and having like I pull out the whole sort of it almost looks like a little loaf of bread out of the Ziploc, and then I will gently pull apart clumps and then gently pull apart plants and then put them in their new containers. There's something really kind of calming about that as well. But also, when you're doing several thousands, it does get, it gets to be a lot of work. And I have been lucky enough this spring to have several people volunteer to help kind of tease them apart and get these things
Right,
growing and going.
right, right. And what do you put them in peat pots?
I have tried a few different things. So like my first time, I used like I think they were made out of wood pulp.
Okay.
And they were fine. Well, they were fine, but they lost moisture so much more quickly than like a regular plastic container.
Okay.
So like it became a point of like, okay, I had to water them all the time because I didn't want them to dry out. And then as a result of watering a lot, some of them, depending on where they were in the tray, would get too moist and then they would start molding. Like, so there's a lot of sort of things to figure out if you're going to want to get them to a place of them being able to get them to the public, right? But if you wanted to put them in your yard, I think you don't have to go through all those steps.
Right.
You could just like get your clump and divide it into a certain number of pieces and put those
And
pieces
do
directly into the
direct
ground.
planting in the yard. That's exactly right. We did that. I grew out this year some of the Rattlesnake Master,
Those
and
are so fun.
I was and they were late to come to germinate, which I was not knowing it, never having done that one before, I guess is the nature of the thing, and they just wait a little longer to come up. But we took those directly from in my case, the milk jugs, and separated them out just sort of grossly, and then put them in the yard. And
Have
we've
fun.
had almost 100% success with those.
That's so great.
And now it's going to be a year or so before they're going to do the flowering routine. They don't flower their first year. That's been our experience anyway. But yeah, Rattlesnake Master, and that's a hard to find plant actually. if you just go out to the stores to try to find.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, I have I have a bunch of Rattlesnake Master now in my, in my yard, but also I have gotten a lot of those available for plant sales in the past. And the what was fun was, like, this is also like you live and you learn, right? Like, some of those that weren't distributed as part of a sale, I put those back in a raised bed. And then for the next, event, brought made them more avail made them available again, and they were that much bigger and stronger. And it just it, it's I think you there's just a lot of ways you can go about, like, working with a plant if you're careful and if you give it just the basics that it needs, like some soil. And also, so regarding re soil, what I've learned, and I'm sure most gardeners have learned, is that, like, not every plant likes every kind of soil. And so sometimes if your soil is too rich, some of these beautiful plants won't do so well. I was just talking
That's
to
right.
some colleagues about butterfly weed, and it's that bright orange one in the milkweed family, and
Right.
how mine didn't really do anything. Like, they didn't really thrive when they were in my backyard, where there's, like, higher quality dirt, if you will, there's more moisture. But the ones in my front yard, which is just kind of not great quality dirt, and it gets really hot and dry, those have thrived.
They
Those
love
are
it.
thriving. Yes.
Yeah,
So
they love it.
it's just like, and some of the coneflowers and whatnot. So it's sometimes, as much as you pour love into them, some of them need really.
They thrive on neglect is what
Yes,
is the
basically, that's a
expression.
great way to put it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, this is fun. We mentioned Roundstone native seeds as a source of seeds, and I've actually been up there, and that's been a wonderful place to go visit. We interviewed John Seymour, who is
Oh, great.
the owner of that
Yes.
operation up there. He was one of the earlier podcasts I've done,
Oh, that's so great. I'll look for it.
but
Yeah.
that if you go on their website, listeners, please go on their website and find seed. But when you buy, be very careful because they'll sell you a pound of seed and a pound of little bluestem seed or a pound of coneflower seed. Will go a long way. So be thoughtful about how much you order, but and then really not expensive. But
No,
this.
I mean, and John is also very generous. So we went up there as part of they did sort of a training day where they showed the facilities and they talked about native seed and ecotype, and we got to talking to him, and he learned a little bit about us. This is very early on, and he was excited at the possibility of us growing some of our own. And then he ended up sending us a box full of different seeds from, like, for free, just as a
Right.
gift, because he was excited about the
Right.
idea. So yeah,
Right.
very wonderful people there.
Well, and the seed that you get from them is not stratified seed. And so if you were to buy that seed and hold it and wait till next, May and put it out in the garden, it probably would not grow. So that's the idea is why we're talking about this today is plan ahead and do plan for your winter sowing project now. Start collecting your milk jugs or start assembling your supplies you can have a successful try. Now, when is the plant sale this fall for the Neighbors for Natives?
Yes, our plant sale is, the actual day to pick up plants is on November 1st,
Okay.
and we're going to be at the airpark again. It's Cornelia Fort, that's by Shelby, in Shelby Bottoms, from 11 to 1. But people, so what we do is, we have day, like, we have species of plants available for anyone who walks up to buy that day. But we also have these kits. We call them pollinator kits that we put together. We have a kit for shade, mostly shady backyards, and kits for mostly sunny backyards. And those can actually be pre-ordered. So people can go on our website, neighborsfornativeplants.org, and the four is a number four. And they can click there and put their order in. It's actually, I just made everything live yesterday. So like people can go ahead and get their orders in. And so what happens is then it walks you through the process. It tells you which plants are in there. Also on our website, you get a little description of each of the plants that we have in the kits, and a little bit about their value for the environment. Like, some of them are great for hummingbirds. Some of them are like pretty deer resistant, and some of them are like great. Actually, we've been thinking a lot more lately about birds. And so, yes, the first focus was on pollinators and making sure they thrive, but partially because, pollinator babies and pollinators themselves are food for lots of birds. And so
Right,
kind of
right.
thinking about those birds, even beyond like the food, for instance, like the down of milkweed seed pods gets used in the nests of various birds. And I think that's really neat, So just kind of thinking about how this all can connect to helping support the ecosystems around us.
Very good. Well, Bika, it's been a pleasure to get to know you and to have you on the program.
Thank you so
And
much.
thank you so much for your time today. I've really appreciated it so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.